Welcome into Husker Max today, April 14th, 2025. By quirk of both of our schedules, this might be our first actual show in April. It's been a couple of weeks. Nick Handley over there with plenty of stuff with the Huskers Radio Network, so always out and about, not just doing stuff with baseball, but doing stuff with Sports Nightly, so sometimes that takes a little bit of time away, and we've had opportunities, especially on Thursdays, which is why we will not have a show on Thursday, is throughout this spring football session, we have had, it's been in the morning that we've had the opportunity to go over and hear from some coaches and some players. Tomorrow, we will get our third open practice of the season, of the spring session. We've had two already. It's very limited in what we're able to see, but let's start with football, Nick, and they are 10 practices in. Tomorrow will be practice 11. We have to remember when they get to the Husker games, that counts as one of their 15, and that counts as one of their scrimmages. This past weekend was one of those scrimmages. Matt Rhule, we went over to the Hawks Championship Center. He said that it was physical. He wouldn't say that they're necessarily dominating anybody in any particular thing, but it was extremely physical. They ran about 90 plays. They had three groups. They wanted to get about 30 plays each. And he said they were doing a lot of situations as well. Third downs, third and long, red zone, other very specific things. He was very happy with the way the team operated. There's a lot of new guys on this roster. There's a lot of new coaches on this roster. To get to that first scrimmage, Nick, when you hear that things operated well, the guys were physical, and I know that there are some coaches that come out and they just kind of puff smoke up your butt, but you don't kind of get that with some of this coaching staff, especially Dana Holgorsen. But Matt Rhule on Saturday saying things have gone well so far through that first scrimmage. What's your takeaway?
Yeah, and I think when you have a 90-play scrimmage and you hear that the theme of it was physical, this is the whole part about spring ball that I always say no news is good news. And the no news being there wasn't anything major from injury standpoints. Matt Rhule himself said that they came out of it relatively healthy, which I think when you're ramping things up, when you're trying to simulate the highest level of speed that you can in all these reps, but then you're doing some good on good, you're applying the physical nature of spring ball now in actual competition settings. This is where sometimes you do brace yourself a little bit that there could be one of those moments where someone does get banged up. I mean, we know even without contact sometimes, or when it's not even as physical, yeah, there can be those non-contact injuries. But I think that to me stood out more than anything is that you had a physical scrimmage, you went 90 plays, and you came out of it healthy. I think you have to start with that. And then, Caleb, the other part about this spring, and I'm still in the camp, and I'm sure you probably are too, and I'm sure there's a lot of Nebraska fans that follow this football program that are also hearing a lot of this, processing a lot of this from the spring and what the coaches are saying, that are also in that wait-and-see mode, or I'll believe it when I see it. But I got to admit, I am just a little bit intrigued by what the stock could be for the running back room, mm-hmm, and the emergence of, we already know what Emmett Johnson is. And I think he's one of those guys, if I could make a baseball reference, because that's what I've been inundated with lately. Emmett Johnson reminds me a lot of a Will Walsh, mm-hmm, a guy that you know pretty much every time you give the ball to what you're going to get. And a lot of it's good. Okay. Is it overwhelmingly good? No. Does it need to be overwhelmingly good? No. Just like Will Walsh on a Friday, he's going to put you in a position to win a game, where I think Emmett Johnson is the same type of running back that can give you, he's well-rounded. The things that he does pretty well, just doesn't have that absolutely electric speed as maybe some of the running backs you might see that would be considered a better, more explosive running back. But there's a lot of things you're going to like about him, and he's going to give you a chance to have success, just like when I see Will Walsh on a Friday. So that's my analogy there. But also this emergence of Quentin Ives, and yes, you brought up somebody that I am still trying to get a true feel for, Dana Holgorsen, but I'm with you. I don't think Dana throws things around unless he is pretty confident of what he is seeing to be true. And he has talked a lot about Quentin Ives. And I think that that also is intriguing from the development of the running back. We're looking for that room to have two to three guys that you feel are really going to elevate that group as a whole here in 2025. And so between that recent chatter about the emergence of Quentin Ives and Emmett Johnson just being the steady guy that we know he is, and hearing Dane Holgorsen talk about that particular position group for a guy, you know what? He's just coached a lot of football, and I just don't think he comes across a guy like, I don't have time to BS you guys. I don't have time to blow smoke up your butt. This is what I'm seeing. You're asking me a question. I'm answering it. This is what I'm seeing. And I think based on his answers, this makes that running back room, I think, a little bit more interesting, at least to me, than I thought it would going into camp.
Well, think about the way that running back room was utilized over the last few games of the season. When you got Dana Holgorsen in there calling the plays, obviously we saw Ramir Johnson in the Pinstripe Bowl, and you're just like, man, that usage and the way he was able to get the ball, not just running it between the tackles, but finding the ball in space, and Quentin Ives getting a touchdown. And so you feel like Emmett Johnson is in a good place to be the lead back. You're going to get some people really wetting themselves if you say bell cow. I don't think bell cow. I think lead back. And then, yeah, you get to Quentin Ives, and you don't really know where, like, Jamarian Parker, who's been dealing with some injuries, but Connor Booth, incoming freshman, those guys have both had some good – E.J. Barthel had some good things to say about them, the running backs coach. But I walked out last week – the last time we heard from Holgorsen, and I was talking with some other media members, and we were just like, yeah, Holgorsen isn't BSing you. Like, that's not a guy who's coming out there to say, yeah, the best practice we've ever had. He's not that coach, you know? One of the other things that Holgorsen talked about was Justin Evans on the offensive line. And he has played some center, but he's now converting full-time to center. And I'm going to grab the exact quote, because I wrote a story for this, and you can find all of these up at HuskerMax.com. But Dana Holgorsen said that Justin Evans, he can be as good a center that exists in college football. I firmly believe that. And this comes in the same at the time that he said that, it was just a couple of weeks removed from Cam Jurgens, who is a converted center, being on campus as a Super Bowl champion, coming back. He's working out in the offseason. We've seen his name. The name tag is always there at the front desk that he is around. So he's around this program. Those guys are getting tips from one of the best in the world at that position. And, of course, he was able to go learn from one of the best in the world for a couple of years before taking over the center position in Philadelphia. But Justin Evans, if he can figure that out at that center spot, because they're specifically on offense, there are two guys that have to make calls when you get to the line. Your quarterback, and we know what Dylan Raiola is up here. And we've heard all of the coaches talk about how cerebral he is getting up there, getting checks, changing where guys are. But if you get up there and you can have your center, one, be really good at snapping the ball, doing his blocking, but that center spot has to be calling stuff out on the other line as well. So if you get up there and the offensive coordinator, who has seen some pretty dang good players across the country, is he saying that this can be as good a center as exists in college football, that's saying something going through the rest of the spring and into the fall.
Yeah, and I think that was always going to be – I don't know about you, Caleb. I thought that was going to be an interesting competition. And I'm not trying to say it's over, but I think those remarks tell you a lot of what you need to know. Yeah,
it sounds over.
it definitely sounds like it, and I don't think it was because the guys are, you know, if you're looking at a certain aspects of that position that all of a sudden are just not collectively good when it comes to the competition there, that there's a step down, because I think you and I talked about this the last time we had a show, and that was the Ben Scott effect of a guy that we didn't talk about that much. But it's also, when you're not talking that much about the center, it's actually a pretty good thing, because when we talked about Cam Jurgens a lot when he was at Nebraska, we were talking about the snapping issues. And then we got a chance
for his first season. Yeah,
absolutely. And then we started talking about how he was making the turn on that and he was becoming a dominant force. Ben Scott was, he was a stabilizer up front, and he was, I think, out of that group for his 2 years, he was consistent. He had that consistency that you want to have at that position. And so I don't think that the reason you're not hearing about other guys at that position as much as Justin Evans is because all of a sudden that competition hasn't been what they thought it would be. I think this is just where Justin Evans said, hey, this is a spot that I wanted as soon as Ben Scott graduated. And this was one that I feel is my spot, and someone's going to have to absolutely yank it away from me. And I'm not going to make that easy. So this is more indicative of what he is doing as opposed to the competition, the younger guys that were also vying for that spot. So I think that bodes very well. And then also hearing when Donovan Raiola was speaking about the offensive lineman not that long ago, I know I was extremely excited about Elijah Pritchett.
Yes.
But the Rocco Spindler addition, you knew that if they could drive that one past the finish line and get him, especially coming off of a national championship appearance and having some serious big boy reps in the playoffs, being a starter, and then coming in when a lot of offensive linemen that have been at Nebraska are either not available at all this spring or limited, that you have an alpha amongst alphas that is hitting the ground running when it comes to not only what he can already do with the amount of starts and reps that he had under his belt at high-level college football, but being able to come in and be that vocal leader as well. And from all indications, it sounds like that has meshed really well. He hasn't pissed anybody off by walking in acting like his you-know-what doesn't stink. He's come in with instant credibility. And it sounds like between the play on the field and the way that he embraced mat drills too. I mean, he even said, I think during one of the conversations he had with Jessica on Sports Nightly about how he was calling his parents talking about how tough mat drills was, that yeah. He's been challenged himself, but I think he's applied that in a good way too. I mean, we know how important the growth and the step that this offensive line has to take in 2025, as we were just talking about running backs too. You know, you talk about Justin Evans at center, Rocco Spindler also there with the amount of experience he has. Elijah Pritchett, it sounds like he's just been doing the work. He's not a guy that's, you know, a huge rah-rah guy, but he's a guy that's been very present, and you've known where he's at. That this is between the running game and the offensive line and those two things that need to take a step forward in 2025. Again, all indications sound like what you needed to get out of them from the spring at this point, you're getting. Now, what does that mean for the fall? We don't know. And that's why I go back to that. I'm in that wait-and-see camp with the running backs. I'm in that wait-and-see camp with the offensive line because I'm just going off of the past. And I know sometimes you just got to live in the present. But until we see this stuff happening on a Saturday in the fall when it matters, I think everybody's going to be in a little bit of that mindset.
Well, and you had Holgorsen said last week, the offensive line got yelled at today. Maybe because of whatever it was that happened in the practice. But the thing that you're getting, and I'll preface this by saying that it's never a good situation when you have the number of guys that Nebraska has sitting out, especially on the offensive line for this yeah. spring. But the number of reps that the rest of the room is getting, that the younger guys in that room right. are getting, your floor is coming up. You don't know where your ceiling would necessarily be if you had everybody healthy and everybody going through the spring. But you, like you said, Rocco and Elijah coming in, those are two big additions. Those helped raise your ceiling. Mm-hmm. Can you raise your floor? And I think that's what this spring is for the offensive line, is raising your floor. Get better, absolutely, like wherever you can to make it the peak as high as possible. But if you get that floor really high,
yeah,
I think that can be just as impactful for this team, that maybe it's not an all Big Ten offensive line, but if you're honorable mention all Big Ten offensive line, that's pretty damn good. There's 18 teams in the league,
right?
You know, so this isn't six teams and pretty much everybody gets to have a bunch of dudes represented. This is a big league. So if you can raise that floor and that level of play, I think that'll be really impressive for this team. Two other position groups I want to hit on before we move on from Nebraska football specifically, but the wide receiver room and the depth that room has. You've had some obviously really big time transfers come in. In particular, like a Dane Key coming yep. in. But we also learned that Hardly Gilmore the IV was dismissed from the team. Matt Rhule said it was nothing criminal, just he's been dismissed from the team. So that's all left out there for everyone to decide. I don't have any thoughts on that other than he's not here. That's someone that you thought potentially could have helped you, but you've got Dane Key. You've got the guy out of Cal. You've got Ja'Cory Barney coming back. You've got Carter Nelson still out there, but he's recovering from his hip surgery.
Yeah.
You've got a lot of speed, a lot of size, and you have an offensive coordinator who knows what the hell he's doing with it. Hopefully. And he's got a track record of knowing what the hell he's doing with it. And you have a quarterback who looks like he is in a really good place to take a good jump in year two. The wide receivers, do you, Nick Handley? Where are you just your impressions right now? I know for a lot of these, it's still going to be wait and see because we were sold a bill of goods on some good guys coming in last year that just never played out that way.
I'm going to first start with, you brought up Hardly Gilmore. And I'm getting the sense you, and this is how I was too, I want to make a bigger deal out of that, but this is where I continue to credit Matt Rhule for always nipping that in the bud. He gives you enough information where you're still wondering, okay, details, I want to know exactly what happened, but he gives you enough information where it's easy just to move on from it. You're like,
when he says it's not criminal, I go, okay, cool.
Yeah, exactly.
That tells me he either wasn't in the 105 or wasn't doing things in practice. Okay, fine, cool. That's now completely the football thing. And if that's a football decision, great. Mm-hmm. I don't really have any more to worry about it.
Well, and he holds guys accountable mm-hmm. when they are not buying into the culture when it comes to the things that not only are they doing during mat drills, but when they're doing the team building, when they're doing the community service and all of that. So I don't know exactly what it was, but when he finds a guy that they think can help him on the field, but they're not going to be a good culture fit, we've seen them distance themselves from those players before. And it could be something as simple as that. I don't know exactly what it is, but I think, again, Matt Rhule doing a good job of allowing us to move on from that one. And again, he had never played for Nebraska, so we didn't know what he was going to do. And he did come to Nebraska with some baggage. And I think Dakeel Shorts really wanted to give him a fresh start. I think Dana Holgorsen, with Dakeel Shorts probably vouching for him, thought, okay, yeah, let's give him a shot. Unfortunately, it didn't work out. But to your original question about the thoughts on the wide receiving room, yeah, I mean, Dane Key and Isaiah Hunter are the two headliners right there. But I mean, I still think this is Ja'Cory Barney, where I think he's probably been pushed a little bit now too, of one of the more explosive returning guys from this team a year ago. Now's got some other competition in there to get the football, to make the plays. But I think Ja'Cory Barney, everything that we've heard and continue to hear about him, whether it's Dana Holgorsen, whether it's Matt Rhule or whoever, that he loves the game. He loves the competition. He wants to be a part of everything that this team is doing. And he does it with such enthusiasm and excitement that he just loves football. So you look at those guys, but where I'm more intrigued with this wide receiving group, I know I've used that word a lot today, intrigued, because that's kind of where I am, is guys like an Isaiah Mosey, a Cortez Mills, some of the newer players that aren't going to all of a sudden just burst on the scene as true freshmen, but guys that also provide some of that depth, much like what we saw Ja'Cory Barney do as a true freshman, where he showed his ability to be a playmaker right out of the gate. But even a Keelan Smith out of Kansas City, even a Quinn Clark, some of those guys that are all of a sudden not just players that you're waiting to develop a little bit, but guys that have been in the program for at least a year, took the red shirt, and now are looking to make a step forward, that I think there is competition, that it's maybe not as much as last year where you had the headliners and, having Banks and having some of the other guys that you thought could really contribute. I think between Dane Key and Isaiah Hunter, what they've shown they can do, and then you throw in some exciting freshmen, but also some very interesting redshirt freshmen or sophomore explosive player like Ja'Cory Barney, and then you put all of that into a Dana Holgorsen offensive system, to where route running is going to be heavily emphasized and hammered, that you are not going to be out on the field if you are not running routes to their precise crispness and effectiveness. And you're also meshing that in with the right arm of number 15. I think this is a group that it's hard not to maybe get a little ahead of our skis on this, because I do think it's a group. Again, I look at the guy who is pushing the buttons on the offense, and given his track record with what he can do with speed and with wide receivers, whether we're talking about guys that are 6'3" or guys that are 5'11", that he can exploit matchups. And that's where I think you look at this younger group that can really do that part of the offense. They can really do that part with their speed to exploit those matchups. So to me, it maybe the better way to put this is, Caleb, it's not even necessarily the players themselves in that wide receiving group, although that's a big part of it. It's the scheme itself, and it's the fit that they have. The scheme itself on what they're going to try to do to make Dylan successful, but also have that big play offense, that big play capability when it comes to all those guys that are going to be on the field in the wide receiving position.
Yeah, scheme's going to be the big game changer. Then you start to add in really, really talented guys. There are 16 wide receivers still on this roster. We'll see what happens. We'll talk a little bit of transfer portal. That opens in 2 days for the spring window. Holgorsen also mentioned a couple of guys that we haven't said their names yet, Cortez Mills and Isaiah Mosey. Holgorsen said both of those guys will contribute this fall. In particular, he said that one-on-one reps, those guys probably have the highest percentage success rate. Very rarely do DBs get their hands on those guys. They have the unique ability to be able to stay away from defenders. So extremely talented, but he also mentioned they're freshmen and their heads spin a little bit. So there's only you. So you go out there and what do freshmen do really well when they're exceptionally talented? You go out there and you tell them to do one thing. Like, that's it. And that's what those guys are going to do. It's going to be, I need you to go out and you're going to run a five yard in and then just go make the catch and run. Like, you're not going to get out there and give them a bunch of option routes, you know? Mm-hmm. Okay, read this DB and then go do whatever the read is. For those guys, in like Carter Nelson was able to be effective in what he was able to do last year because he was able to just go out and play. I mean, if you go back even a few years, like Wandale Robinson being exceptional because he was just able to go out and play.
Yep.
Dylan Raiola for being so cerebral, like a lot of times it was just being able to go out and play and not have everything collapsing around him and having to run for his life. So there are some good things that can happen when you have some guys like that, like Mills and Mosey. So we'll see how that wide receiver room continues to develop. The other room that I want to hit on really quick, Matt Rhule talked about the secondary. He said we can start 6 different guys at corner right now. We could start 4 or 5 different guys at safety. He had mentioned the week before about I'm blanking on the name. I'll find it here in just a second. Deshaun Singleton, he said he'll be shot out of a cannon this year. But you've got Marquise Buford, Malcolm Hartzog, Deshaun Singleton, Sierra Wright. You've also got guys that have been in the program for at least a year in Jeremiah Charles, Mario Buford, Caleb Benning. This secondary, and Matt Rhule even said it on Saturday, we'll find out if anything changes with the transfer portal, but this secondary looks like there's a big step coming in 2025.
Yeah, and I think you brought up guys like Caleb Benning. We saw Donovan Jones play in that Pinstripe Bowl last year too, and I thought was very valuable. And Donovan Jones, I think, is another guy that they're just scratching the surface with him. And so, yeah, what are you doing with those redshirt freshmen that are going to be now in their second year and providing that type of reinforcement, because you already have guys that have played a lot of snaps for this secondary and have really done it in, for the most part, in a pretty high level and have been very successful. So it is another area that I think when you're looking at this defense and what they lost up front, I, for one, feel good about having a Riley Van Poppel. I feel good about having a Cam Lenhart. I like those guys up front, but now their reps are going to increase significantly. So it's hard to really gauge what you're going to see out of that defensive front, especially that interior, when you lose guys like Ty Robinson and Ash Hutmacher that were an integral part. But
and James Williams. For more on that, go to
HuskerMax.com. That was a really good just sneaking his name in there on that after after some words of one James Williams. Apparently really likes his teammates at Florida State.
Good
and
for him.
Yeah,
good
absolutely. But the second, and you know, with the linebacking core as well, I think that that was always going to be another area that you're looking at this defense and saying, okay, so you're replacing some guys, you're looking at some guys that are were huge contributors a year ago that you don't necessarily have, but that youth movement. I mean, you and I have spent times talking about Vincent Shavers and what that guy I think is going to be when his time is over at Nebraska. Mm-hmm. I think that is an NFL type of dude, and yes, watching him just cut loose in the Pinstripe Bowl was fun. I think Willis McGahee is going to be a true stud as well. So, and then young guys too, Christian Jones. Hey, they didn't recruit him just because he was a West Side guy, just because he's an Omaha guy and you got to get him. Christian Jones is a stud. And when he has a little bit more of that seasoning behind him and gets ready for college football, he's going to be a playmaker as well. So you've got that position, I think, now in its developmental phase of it with a couple of veterans. But thank goodness for that secondary, because the secondary has the perfect blend of starters, but also guys that are ready to jump onto the scene too with those redshirt freshmen. So the amount of options that they have, and I think this is the other part that we've seen, and this was not, I don't think, just a Tony White thing. I think this was Tony White really buying into this, but we know because we've seen it on the offensive side too. Matt Rhule is one of those guys that would rather have quality reps as opposed to quantity reps. Mm-hmm. And so when I think of the creativity you can have in the secondary with more than capable bodies between experienced guys and guys that are trying to get that experience, that you can still look at it as it's not who starts the game, it's who's on the field at the end, who finishes the game, where that could look completely different, but not necessarily in a bad way, because you have guys that are competing for every one of those spots between corner, between nickel, dime, the safety positions. So there's a lot, I think, that needs to be sifted out, but it's great to know that it's not a problem of, well, we've got a bunch of bodies, we just haven't seen a lot of game tape on them because none of them have really played a lot of college football. That's not the case for this secondary right now. There's plenty of actual game reps and starts under that group's belt. You just have another talented wave of underclassmen that are ready to start getting theirs too.
There's a portion of this that is art imitates life, life imitates art. But when I play college football 26, again, that's different. I'm not saying I'm Matt Rhule. I get it. But there is a difference with the way I'm able to be aggressive defensively with linebackers and defensive linemen with whether or not my secondary is good. You know, if the secondary is out of their minds good, I can tee off and send six guys at the quarterback. If my secondary is not good, we're probably rushing three or four.
Yep.
At best. And then you have to really pick and choose when you can dial things up. When your secondary is good, it gives you a lot more options on things to do. In particular, Matt Rhule has talked about this. John Butler has talked about this. You'd be hard-pressed to find a defensive coach who hasn't talked about this. Improving the way Nebraska performs on third downs and in the red zone defensively, getting off the field.
Right.
So when you have a secondary who is bringing back so much experience and so much talent, that does allow you to get creative with what you want to do in your scheme and where you want to bring some extra pressure, where you want to stunt maybe here, bluff your blitz a little bit. The different things that you can do with having a really good secondary help out the entirety of your defense. So that's the life imitating art, art imitating life. Now, we did mention this, the transfer portal begins in 2 days. So at that point, we will be, it'll be Wednesday. So we'll hear a little bit from the coaching staff on Thursday, and then it'll be Easter weekend. So we won't hear about from the coaches. Right now, there are 132 guys on this roster. The house settlement has not been approved yet. And that house settlement is where you get the roster limits to come from. Matt Rhule talked this last weekend about the potential of grandfathering in, like kind of going step by step. So this next year might be 125. The year after that, 115. Then 105. So you kind of layer it in just a little bit. We don't know for sure if that's going to happen. It sounded like the judge was hoping that that would be a change in there, at which point Nebraska wouldn't have to cut so many guys. But we don't know that yet with the transfer portal opening. So Matt Rhule said that they're completely open and honest with the guys on if there was a 105, you're in, you're competing for it, you would be out of the 105. Yeah. there are some going to be some tough decisions for some guys who might be in that 115 range, and would, and maybe they're an underclassman. They've redshirted a year, but they're just not in that 105. They're not competing for that 105 spot right now, but they want to play, but they also want to take the time to develop. But if you want to take the time to develop and you're not in the 105, and that does become the hard and fast rule, you have to make a decision for this transfer portal window. This is going to be a really intriguing next few weeks in the way this all plays out without knowing the exact rules everyone will be playing under this fall, Nick.
Well, and wouldn't that be something that if you just assume, okay, well, it is going to have to be down to a 105, and I know I'm on the outside looking in, I need to start thinking about better opportunities to actually get on the football field so you transfer, then you find out later that, hey, you know what, we actually can hold more players. Yeah. You don't have to cut as many, and you know, you legitimately like it. I think that's the misconception when people leave schools. I think people always just assume that they're disgruntled with their current coach or the coaching staff, the fact that they're not playing. It's not their fault, it's the coach's fault, because I've been here the whole time. You just can't assess me correctly. You know, that's how it always goes. We never want to blame ourselves for it. We always want to say, well, that guy doesn't know what he's talking about, and I'm going to leave. That's not the case. There are a lot of these decisions that are made because they simply understand that the competition around them is hard for them to crack the two deep. It's going to be hard for them to crack the 105. And so as much as they want to stay, as much as they are treated very well as a student athlete at the University of Nebraska, if they're seeing the writing on the wall, and good for the coaching staff to have those honest conversations, those are tough conversations. Make no doubt about it. No question about that. Is when you have to sit down with a guy that you did recruit and a guy that you did at some point think was going to be able to contribute to this football program and maybe even possibly have a future at the next level. And then a couple of years go by where that progress, that development hasn't taken off the way that you hoped it would be. Absolutely. Those are hard conversations for the coaching staff to have, but they're necessary conversations. I mean, they serve the student athlete very well by doing so, but it's just this whole confusion of what is exactly going to happen. And so not only are there going to be tough decisions having to be made by the coaching staff, but even for these players that still don't 100% know if when all is said and done and the dust settles on this entire thing with the house settlement, that all of a sudden they could have actually stayed and still had a spot as opposed to having to prematurely leave. Although you'd understand that. And it's an interesting time to be a student athlete in any sport, but especially in football. I mean, of course, we all saw the news with Tennessee and Nico's situation where you're essentially having an OTA holdout. I mean, that's exactly what that was. And when you see the news that Tennessee has decided to move on from him, you see that stuff in the NFL. You don't see that stuff in college football. That's an NFL thing. We're like, you know what? We couldn't come to terms on the contract, so we're going to cut him. But that's also a similar situation where the power that a lot of the student athletes have, but what's even worse is the power that they think they have, but they still don't have it. And the Nico in Tennessee situation is a perfect example of a guy's like, you know what? I'm going to play the game. I'm going to play the pro game here and do the negotiating. And Tennessee said, you know what? We're not an NFL team, so we're not going to get involved in that. We recruit just fine. We don't need you. So again, all of these different examples of student athletes and the Nico example is going to be painted as, you know, the guy wanted too much, he's trying to be a pro in this situation, and it bit him in the butt. Now he'll find a place to go. There's no question about that. But it paints the student athlete as greedy, entitled, wanting more than what they already get. And there's probably a legitimate case to be made in his situation. But there's also student athletes that are having to make decisions because they just don't know if they're going to be a part of a 105 or a 105 is going to be the number or not. But they can't wait around anymore, because once that comes down and they're still sitting on the same team at maybe the 113th or 114th player when it comes down to the pecking order, and all of a sudden they haven't made that decision, then what do they do? Did you react too late? So again, it's a very interesting time for student athletes, especially in this sport.
Well, because you brought up Nico, and I think that's good. It ties into a lot of the stuff that Matt Rhule was talking about. He was talking about there are a lot of guys getting some bad advice. There are a lot of guys getting advice where it is based entirely on the money. Nico will find somewhere. Mm-hmm. He's not going to find somewhere for or $6 or $8 million for this next year. He would have commanded a couple million dollars in the portal the last window. He won't this window because most places have their guy or have their NIL dollars already assigned. So there's the part of it on where is the power balance between the teams and the programs and the players. And that has obviously shifted a lot in the NIL era. But I think Nico was getting a lot of bad advice from his camp. And his camp is his agent and his dad. Mm-hmm. His dad has been very vocal on Twitter, on social media. But that advice being given was definitely not in Nico's best interest for this next year if it is entirely based on the money. Because, like, you look at the way he played this last year, he actually had a down year compared to the year before. But he would have commanded easily $1.5 million, $2 million on the open market, at least, if he had gone in this last window. There would have been programs that would have wanted him. But he's also limited now because the SEC, until someone sues and it gets removed, has a you cannot transfer within the conference at the spring portal window. Which
for the record, I like that. I like that rule. I like that rule.
Well, it goes back to the when the old transfer rules for a lot of leagues. So first of all, you had to sit out a year if you transferred somewhere, unless you were a grad transfer, and you could not transfer within your league. Like, the leagues were allowed to institute an additional year that you could potentially have had to sit out. So it's kind of going back to that a little bit. I'm interested to see when someone does want to transfer within their conference and takes it to court, because everything has gone against any kinds of rules. Yeah. But like, Nico was getting bad advice. He'll find somewhere. It's not going to be in the SEC. The Big Ten seems to have all of their quarterbacks, unless he wants to go to Iowa, you know, but he's not going to get $2 million at Iowa. He's not going to get $1 million at Iowa. He's not going to get, at a lot of these places, the money that he thinks he should get. So at that point, the holdout worked so far against him right at the end of spring ball, the last actual practice, and then their spring game. That was a bonkers, bonehead move from all parties involved. Absolutely applaud Tennessee for saying, yeah, we're not playing this game. We'll figure out something else, because they think that they can still be a playoff team without him. Good for them.
And they can, because they recruit well.
Yes, they do. And they've got a pretty darn good coach there.
Yes.
excuse me, as well. Let's look at a different transfer portal, and let's flip over to basketball real quick before we get to baseball to close things out. First, on the basketball side, women's basketball, over the weekend, lost a signee, not a commitment, a signee in Olivia Hamlin, who, out of Utah, averaged 28 points a game this last year. Stupid good scorer. When you say, like, there's elite scorer, there's stupid good scorer. And that's what Olivia Hamlin is. And that's what you were hoping to bring in for Amy Williams' squad. Instead, she asked for and got a release. I do like this when programs say, yeah, you know, that's a thing you want to do. We're not going to hold you hostage, because there are some programs that do hold these young people hostage, even though, hey, you signed it. You got to come here. Well, they're 17, 18 years old. And guess what? She's staying closer to home. It is BYU.
Right.
I don't have this confirmed, but you saw what BYU was doing on the men's side for basketball. There's probably some a cash infusion involved with what BYU athletics is going through, especially on the basketball side. Nebraska men's basketball will see BYU in a home-and-home exhibition in Lincoln this year, and then at out there in Utah the next year, where, by the way, the number one high school recruit is going to BYU this year. So there's some of that. So that's on the women's side. On the men's side, several incoming transfers. We are we're seeing the flipping of this roster with Kendall Blue, Will Cooper, the Lithuanian that we will just call UJ or Uggie, I believe.
Uggie.
Jamarcus Lawrence coming back. You have Quentin Rimes coming in from high school, and then Price Sanford out of Iowa coming in as well. So that's already several newcomers that will be coming in. As for portal departures, Gavin Griffiths and Nick Janowski are the only two to exit so far. You knew there was going to be a lot of movement. You knew it was going to be a roster flip because you had so many seniors. But, man, that's a lot of names to go through.
It is, and also there is the hope that you can get another power forward in Ezra Alsar of Utah, who's pretty, I would say, solid numbers. He's not an elite scorer, but he's a guy that is a double-figure type of guy out of Utah. So there's another potential get. I want to start with the departures. The Janowski one for me was, I don't want to say a tough pill to swallow because we just didn't know what he would be. Mm-hmm. Heard a lot of good things though leading up to the season on how he was working out and a guy that could contribute. But you know, it's that attrition we always see in every sport, and there's just going to be certain guys that maybe just don't feel either comfortable with the system or the fit, or if they're really going to see the floor as much, especially with the turnover and the additions that you're bringing over from the transfer portal. I will say my biggest disappointment, though, because I was extremely interested and thought it could be a real sneaky good pickup in the transfer window last year, was Gavin Griffiths. I thought that was a guy from Rutgers that when he showed the minutes that he did, they were usually quality minutes, looked like he was a scorer that was continuing to develop, and thought maybe in Fred's system, especially offensively, his ability to hit the three ball was going to be something that would really benefit this Nebraska team. But again, you get that, wish the kid no ill will. It just didn't find himself on the floor as much. I get it. And so he's going to look for another opportunity. But I think if you go back to the additions right now, the Jamarcus Lawrence one is so fascinating because it's so rare that we see the bounce back from the guy who started in any sport, that started at your program, left, and then comes back. But if you look at his experience, not only with Fred, but with Rink Mast, who's coming back. And let's be honest, the biggest portal addition right now, even though he didn't come out of the transfer portal, the biggest addition is Rink Mast. Okay. Yes. What this team could have done with a healthy Rink Mast in 2024-25, I think would have been a huge difference maker. But there's a guy who's played with Rink Mast. There's a guy that understands how that can work out. And so obviously it's an instant fit. And I don't think we ever even got the indication when Jamarcus Lawrence left in the first place that there was any ill will on either side of it. I think they always respected Jamarcus Lawrence and his announcement that he was transferring. You could tell that he really enjoyed his time at Nebraska. So I think it's very cool to see him come back. Yes, you get the Millard South local product as well coming in. There's a lot of, I think, very interesting additions from the standpoint of what you're trying to replace, especially offensively, Caleb. We know that between Bryce Williams and even what Juwan Gary gave you on most nights, there is some points that you really have to chew up. Okay, well, Rink Mast helps that. But I think we all knew, unless Nebraska all of a sudden had this influx in cash that they wanted to pay for elite scorers and what the going rate is now, that you likely weren't going to be able to do that with one or two guys, that you needed a collection of guys that were all going to be effective in their own way offensively, and that's how you make up for that scoring. Now, do you still want the guy that you're going to put the basketball in his hand when it's crunch time, or if there's a night that you just need a guy to absolutely go off? Does that help? Yeah, absolutely that does. And I wouldn't say any of the additions right now, it fit that bill. But it also makes me curious, and I was talking about this not that long ago, about the old Fred Hoiberg teams at Iowa State, when you would watch the balanced scoring, you know, those teams of Naz Long and George Niang and Matt Thomas, and the names go on. I know I'm missing a bunch of them too. But any given night, there was a guy that would give you 16 to 18 points, was going to shoot over 40% beyond the arc, and you had to account for all of that. If this new wave of guys that are all scorers in their own way, just not take over the game 24, 25-point night scorers like what you could get out of a Bryce, but it is going to allow you to be more balanced and effective around the arc, and you're more consistent from that standpoint, to me, that's what those Fred Hoiberg teams at Iowa State had success in doing so. So if you find something that's a little closer to that, hell, I'll take that any day.
Well, you have so many guys coming in that have shot above or around the 40% range from three.
Exactly.
You pair that with the distribution of Rink Mast. You pair that with Jamarcus Lawrence being able to get into creases and dish it out. it bodes well for your team, and it bodes well for if all of these guys just hit 1 to 2 threes a game. Well, you're making double digit threes a game. Now you just got to go, okay, where do we find the rest of these points? And your incoming big man in Rink Mass, like, those guys did a good job of getting to the free throw line and converting at the free throw line. And Fred Hoiberg's teams over the last couple of years, I think back to a couple of those early years, those were bad free throw shooting teams.
Yes. Yeah.
They were bad, bad, bad free throw shooting teams. I think there was one of them. There was a game where they went like 8 for 32 or something. Mm-hmm. And I told Jack Mitchell when I was working at the radio at the time, I said, we can walk to any gym in Lincoln right now. I will walk in, just turn the lights on, and I will make better than 8 for 32. Like, I will touch that ball at the free throw line, and I will make better than 8 for 32. Yeah. Absolutely cold. Haven't shot a ball in multiple years. That's how bad the free throw shooting was. And now it is such a strength for this team. And you saw it, you saw it in the crown. When Nebraska could get consistently to the free throw line and get a lead and late in the game, and that's how Bryce Williams ends up as the single season scoring record holder.
Yep.
Because he was the guy getting the ball at the end, getting all of those free throws. You're right. Rink Mast changes the dynamic of a team and what they're able to do schematically on offense in a way that you hoped you were going to get from somebody. This year, maybe it was you thought you were going to get more of that from Bearkay, but I like the way he plays more on the baseline than at the top of the key, where Rink will make his money, and the way that he distributes the ball really well. Derek Walker distributed the ball really well from there. So that is the ultimate game changer for this team. I hope when they're looking at the last couple of spots, they do get another big guy, whether it's a 4 or a 5, I just need somebody to be in that rotation there. And I hope they just get a guy who he can be a one-on-one scorer. He can shoot well off the pass, but I would like to get another guy who can be you're just going to go get a bucket. Wherever that is, 1, 2, or a 3, you can just go get a bucket. But I like the makeup for this roster so far, and we'll still have to see how exactly everything else shakes out. Now to your hobby, your love of the diamond and baseball. And on one diamond, softball has been absolutely rolling. Yeah. Nebraska softball, they've already got multiple school records for run rule games, for home runs, for individual home runs in a game. Like, it's amazing what Rhonda Ravel has going on that side of Haymarket Park. Now, for the baseball side of it, Nick, it is – I don't think it's overstating it to say that this is not what the team thought the season was going to go like, not what the coaching staff was expecting for this season right now, as the team is below 500, both overall and in the league, 16-20 on the year, 5-10 in the Big Ten Conference, just narrowly needed a rally. But no sweep at Iowa City over the weekend. Did get swept on the in-state rivalry week, the Tuesday, Wednesday with Creighton and Omaha. Creighton coming up again tomorrow up there in Omaha. Just your impressions of this team over the last few weeks, including a series win over Oregon State and a win over Kansas. Like, what is this team that you have to perform well in the Big Ten, but for whatever reason, Oregon State, Kansas, Vanderbilt, like, this team has shown they can play kind of well against the big boys.
And that is, I think, what first and foremost keeps everybody interested in this team is you go up against a newly ranked Kansas team last week against one of the better offensive teams that they've seen this year, and you pretty much stymie them with an all-staff approach on Tuesday, which I thought was fantastic. The Oregon State game. That Sunday game that we thought it may not even happen if this real field doesn't get to where it needs to be. And Nebraska's coming off of just getting drubbed with the home run fest that the Beavers were putting on.
A record for Oregon State.
Yeah, and a Haymarket record too. So let's just break records. And then Nebraska just goes ham on them in the seventh inning of that game. And they get involved and just absolutely spank Oregon State. And they win that series convincingly. I try to tell people, though, as exciting and as cool as that Sunday game was, Friday's the game that you want to look at and say, that's what it's supposed to look like. A 7-2 ball game. Will Walsh was dealing. The offense was opportunistic and they were in clutch situations coming through. That was where it all came together. And that's the example that you've seen in different times of this season where Nebraska against a quality opponent has shown you what it's supposed to look like. It's the games in between. It's the inability to get strike one across the plate, as Will Bolt talks about all the time, and he's absolutely right. That count leverage that the pitching staff sometimes is unable to get on the hitters. And we saw that Saturday where I thought Nebraska really was in control. When Joshua Overbeek hits the solo home run, Iowa had in the previous inning had drawn closer. They're within one run. And then in the top of the eighth, Joshua Overbeek goes yard, and they extend the lead. And you're thinking, okay, Nebraska, in those examples I talk about, just always seem to have the answer when a team would push back. There was a moment where I thought, okay, that's how this game is going to go. Series is going to get tied up, and Sunday's going to be a rubber match. And then the bottom of the eighth inning happened, and it started with the inability to get the strike zone. And for Luke Broderick, who has been fantastic, his slider is as good as I've seen on this staff in a very long time, still having that issue of getting strike one and strike two over the plate early in a count. And you get a couple guys on, you get some traffic, and then Iowa offensively pretty solid all through their lineup. You knew that that was going to come back and hurt you. Against good teams, you do that. When a team doesn't need any extra offensive opportunities, you give them that. They're more times not going to take advantage. Exactly what Iowa did on Saturday. Yesterday was interesting from the simple fact that kind of like the California trip where there was a little bit of an upper respiratory thing going around the team. You had a stomach bug going around the team yesterday. And so you're going into a try to avoid a sweep salvage type Sunday scenario. And then you're told going into it, yeah, you're going to be without Case Anderson and you're going to be without Caden Brumbaugh. Caden Brumbaugh is essentially a 300 hitter, probably your most consistent hitter. Case Anderson's hitting over 300 right now. Those two guys are going to be unavailable because they can't hold anything down right now. Uh-huh. So you get guys like Devin Nunez that steps in. Hogan Heligso, even with a bum ankle, has to play. And I think the idea was to play Hogan at some point this weekend once his ankle was feeling better. But guys are playing some different roles. You got Robbie Bowen getting the start, leading the team or leading off for the team in Case Anderson's spot. So it was off to an auspicious beginning. Jackson Brockett was okay, but not his great stuff as well. And this team, like I said, they keep you interested because they show you signs of whether it's beating a quality team or what Nebraska did. And I was a quality team, don't get me wrong. But the way that they won that game, where it was very similar to Saturday, Iowa took an early lead, then Nebraska took a lead, then Iowa comes back, then Iowa takes a lead late in the game, and then Nebraska comes back and takes a lead, and then they got to hold on to dear life for the very last pitch, and I mean the very last pitch, the ball that was a foot away from pretty much going out and tying that game, and I don't know if Nebraska can recover from giving up that type of a lead, but they showed some grit, they showed some resiliency, they've been able to do that, and now if you look at the part of their schedule that remains, this is where they have to, without question, make their move. Because, Caleb, for a team that is below 500 in both, as you mentioned, their overall record in the Big Ten, there are still RPI opportunities. You got one tomorrow against Creighton. They've got one against Kansas coming to Lincoln next week. You still have another game against Creighton, which is another RPI opportunity, and another Kansas State game. That's another RPI opportunity. Your weekends aren't giving you the greatest opportunities going forward when it comes to the RPI, but there's still enough there that if you can win some series, get yourself above 500 and take advantage of some of these RPI opportunities like they did last week against Kansas. It sounds crazy, but there is still a avenue for this team not having to win the Big Ten tournament to even get to the NCAA tournament. But as we look today, Nebraska is still a game out from making the Big Ten tournament. So there is so much tug of war when it comes to this team of what you want to believe their ultimate ceiling is, because you've seen moments of it compared to what they really are. And I cannot emphasize this enough. You have one major blow to the team this last week too, that hopefully it is short-lived, and it sounds like it will be. Jalen Worthley and Caleb Clark are not on the trip because they're recovering from an injury. Jalen's is more of an arm. Caleb's, what I was told, was probably more of a back injury. So we're hoping that those guys are going to be okay. But having Tucker Timmerman, and you saw it yesterday, what that dude can do and chewing up innings. And he had a tailor-made ground ball that Dylan Carey will tell you he makes that play 99 out of 100 times. Just let it go right through the webbing of his glove. But Tucker Timmerman, his presence, he can eat up two, possibly even three innings, and the guy's a dog. He is a competitor. Having him back, both from a physical standpoint, and I think what it does to the mental psyche of this team, when you're looking for bullpen stability, Tucker Timmerman provides that. So could his now return help out a little bit when it comes, especially in the weekends? Because Northwestern, I never thought I'd ever say this, but you've got a huge weekend against the Northwestern Wildcats in Lincoln, because Nebraska needs to get on that better side of being in the Big Ten tournament and then just start chipping away, put themselves in a solid spot in the middle of that group, which they very much can with the schedule they have in front of them. It's all about that consistency, because the good thing for this team right now is the slug is there. You're seeing multiple guys at over 300 or nearing 300, but you're also seeing a couple of guys that are slugging over 475. You're seeing multiple guys now starting to push each other in extra base hits and driving in runs too. Max Buitenbach, what he's doing as of late, I mean, the guy's unconscious. His pull side power is fantastic, but then he goes the other way, shoots one the other way yesterday too for good measure. Dylan Carey, Tyler Stone, even seeing, let's talk about Joshua Overbeek, who had no home runs, which was crazy at this point of the season, given that some of the shots that he had, the tape measure shots he had last year. He gets two this weekend and was really starting to swing the bat very well this weekend. So if he can kind of stabilize your lineup at that nine spot where he's been hitting and he's driving the baseball, offensively, you feel good about where this team is. Friday was an outlier because Obermueller for Iowa, that guy's the real deal. Will Walsh was fantastic. Obermueller, unfortunately, was just a little bit better because the only mistake, and I mean the only mistake Will Walsh made, unfortunately, it got deposited over the left field wall in the second inning in a 1-0 game. But offensively, you've seen this team turn the corner. They just need that out of the staff more consistently on the mound.
Here's what I'll give you, though, with the offensive production in the Big Ten rankings on where they are. Mm-hmm. Nebraska is 14th, tied for 14th in runs scored, 12th in hits, bottom three in extra base hits. Obviously, our RBI is 12th. Because that comes part of being the runs. Stolen bases, 11th. Mm-hmm. Drawing walks, last in the league.
Yeah.
Striking out, first in the league. Batting average, 15th. Like, it's, I hear what you're saying on the offense turning the corner and you need it from the pitchers, but we've seen over the course of the season that with the pitching staff, it is north of five on the ERA. Right. And we had talked about kind of that being a little bit of a Mendoza line on where you have success for your pitching staff, for at least for Nebraska. It's still north of five there. I just don't want to leave 12 men on base again. I don't want to get to where you have multiple opportunities of runners in scoring position and zero or one outs and they don't get in. Like so many of those. And there was it Saturday's game where it ended on two strikeouts looking.
Like
those types of things are continuing to creep up in a way that I'm accepting what the pitching staff is, sans Mason McConaughey. And then depending on who you have because of some arm injuries or sickness or different things going on, I've accepted what the pitching is. I need the hitters to start doing a little something to help them out some more.
Well, I'll push back on that, though. The runners in scoring position compared to, if you go back to where they were, I want to say middle or even after that California trip, it was god-awful.
Yeah.
It's gotten better. In the two-week stretch after that, they were hitting well over 375 with runners in scoring position. So, And then the slug. That's the other thing of – With the offensive numbers, it was a lot of base hits here, maybe not the most contact here, but in that whole runners in scoring position uptick that they had, you were seeing the extra base hits. You were starting to see the slugging percentage and the slug overall in those moments actually improve. So if you chop down the numbers between maybe the first 15 games to the last 15 or last 10 of where Nebraska is, there has definitely been an improvement. But you're right, as far as the runs allowed, especially, or the runs scored in conference play, I mean, they were averaging essentially three runs. That's not going to get it done. That puts so much pressure on your staff. So you're seeing that at least increase a little bit. And that's the thing I think I'm looking forward to more than anything is, can they continue to improve, especially with some of those more reliable and experienced hitters in the lineup? That's why I bring up Joshua Overbeek. It's encouraging to see him have the week that he did. It's encouraging to see Dylan Carey drive the ball out of the ballpark. It's encouraging to see a guy like Casey Anderson hitting over 300. Caden Brumbaugh, who's been pretty consistent. So a lot of those different elements of this offense outside of the numbers, I think, would tell you that it is a group that's getting better. Your point is justified as far as the strikeout numbers, especially this weekend. It was up again. That needs to improve. Iowa has – Obermueller was fantastic, and that is a big league arm. That was a guy who was drafted in the 19th round last year, decided to come back, and I think Friday is Friday. Yeah, I think that's going to serve him well. But, you know, you still have to be better in that category of battling, putting the ball in play, and at least giving yourself an opportunity to get on base, even if the guys are mishandling the baseball or something, just to put the ball in play. So I would agree with that. But I definitely think that runners in scoring position – the first half of the season was dreadful. That has actually improved here in the last 2 weeks.
We will not have a show on Thursday. Expect to be back this next Monday unless something comes up with all of the other things that we do at Creighton tomorrow, 6 o'clock on FS1 as well as Huskers Radio Network. And then a home weekend with Northwestern Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Saturday, bark at the park so you can bring the dogs out to Haymarket Park and see if any of them can bother our good friend Nick Handley. So, Nick, what calls are you on over the next week?
I've got them all. I think my next next weekend off is the last regular season, Purdue. So,
oh, good. Yeah, we'll keep you busy.
Absolutely. It's Ben and I think up until that Michigan series, and then it'll be David and myself, and then we'll see. Big Ten tournament. Will they be there? And if they are there, where will they be? All that fun stuff.
And if they're not, is there a crown in Las Vegas for them to go play for? best of luck up in Creighton tomorrow. We'll talk again next week and go through everything else happening with the Huskers. Hope everyone has a happy Easter weekend, and we'll be back into it next week, which will be Husker Games Week for the not spring game, but also big volleyball match coming up there. I'm Caleb Henry. That's Nick Handley. Thanks, everybody. Go Big Red.